This is the commercial-free webcast of Innovations with Eiler and Pasek, originally aired on March 19th, 2006.
Welcome. You're listening to Eiler and Pasek and Innovations, and this is a new radio program that's focusing on innovative business practices in the Washtenaw County area, and we're trying to highlight the positive aspects of business in this area. And today, this is Rob Pasek, your host today, and John Baldoni is our guest. And John is a premier leadership consultant, media consultant, communications consultant, who's worked with some of the major corporations in this area, including Ford Motor and others. And John, welcome. Glad to have you on the show today.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate the invitation. I'm a listener to your show, and I always enjoy your insights. And thank you for highlighting the topic of innovation. And I look forward to a nice discussion with you today.
Now, John, you're known around the U.S. as one of the premier authorities on leadership. And you've written a few books now. Is it three books on this topic?
It's actually six books on leadership
books.
Right now.
I'm running behind, John. I'm sorry about that. Can you just outline a little bit about what the books are and what your idea about developing these books is?
Sure. My focus is leadership. And I delve often into communications, motivation, supervision. And my newest book is How Great Leaders Get Results. And in that area, I talk about what leaders need to do to affect change and create opportunities for growth in their own enterprise. And the way they do that is by mobilizing the energy of the people inside the organization. It sounds very simple on the outside and easy to discuss, but leadership is an ongoing 24-hour-a-day effort for anyone in a supervisory position, as you know well, Rob, from your own work.
John, so the newest book is called Getting Results. Can you go through what the other books are in the series where people people want to know where they can find them?
Sure.
So who's published it and where are they available?
Well, my first book is Personal Leadership, Taking Control of Your Work Life. And it's that was a self-published book. And two others are 180 Ways to Walk the Leadership Talk, 180 Ways to Walk the Motivation Talk. And then my three books, newest books, are with McGraw-Hill. And that's Great Communication Secrets of Great Leaders, Great Motivation Secrets of Great Leaders, and How Great Leaders Get Great Results. All of my books are available on Amazon as well as Barnes & Noble and are available in bookstores. And for easy access, you can Google me. My website is johnbaldoni.com. And again, the focus is leadership. And generally, I focus on leadership as an outward enterprise, how you mobilize your own people to get the results you want to achieve.
Okay. John, I've done a lot of work as a business consultant, leadership coach, and probably the most common problem I hear is failure to communicate. And you are one of those rare people who have actually studied communication. And can you give us an idea what people mean when they talk about communication and why failure to communicate is such a problem?
You're absolutely right, Rob. I came across a statistic that managers spend between 50 and 80% of their time communicating. And that communication can take all form from face-to-face, meetings, email, virtual, telephone, whatever. And if you think about if you're spending that significant amount of time on communication and there's a failure to communicate, you're certainly not getting a very good return on your investment. So what I look at as communication is it's actually anyone in a supervisory commission position can communicate. If you look at communication as speaking, articulating a message, and most managers are pretty good at that. But there's two other aspects of communication which are often overlooked. The second is listening, and the third is learning. And failure to listen is what often people mean by failing to communicate. They don't take the time to find out what's on people's mind. They fail to check for understanding. And third, they don't check for, as I said, check for understanding, but also they don't learn from what they hear.
Okay.
Or they don't learn from what they don't hear or see. And observation is critical to the communication process.
Sort of what's under the surface, not just what's on the surface.
Absolutely, Rob. And one of the things I coach managers on, and I'm sure you do with the same, is listen to the grapevine. The grapevine is those informal channels of communication in any organization. And Some people call it the rumor mill. Other people call it the water cooler talk. Whatever it is, if you want to find the pulse of an organization, that's where it is. So managers, it would behoove them to listen to what people are saying or not saying.
Okay. You're listening to Innovations with Eiler and Pasek. This is Rob Pasek today, who's your host. Larry is away. And we are talking to John Baldoni, who is a leadership consultant in Ann Arbor. And you're listening to Talk Radio 1600. John, let's talk a little bit more about how you got interested in this, talking about going below the surface. How did you become somebody who was really interested in communication and leadership? What's your own background on this?
Well, my background, Rob, is as a writer. And I did a lot of work in business meetings and development, and I became a speech writer, and I worked for a lot of senior leaders in this area as well as for global enterprises. And working with people at all levels of management, and particularly those at the top, I would help them articulate a message, but it was one-way communication. And I got involved with, and I started to question, what's happening to that message? Because I would see executives articulate something, and it sounded good, but there would never be any there would never be any movement or any.
So they'd give the speech, but they have no idea where that was going or how much impact it had.
No follow through.
Okay.
And that's a key thing that I coach managers on today, is that while I did talk about speaking and articulating your message, you must stay on message. You must articulate that again and again and again. We're used to this kind of thing from our politicians, and we often make jokes about it, but one thing politicians often do, or at least successful ones, is stay on message, articulate it, and the way you keep that message fresh is by telling stories. And those stories should come from the organization. I like to call them the hero stories.
Uh-huh.
What good things people are doing inside the organization. That gets people excited and motivated.
Now, people probably listen to you and say, okay, this is a great leadership coach, a communication coach, and they wonder, what were you like at 16, John? Were you or 12 back? Where did you grow up, by the way?
I can say, Rob, I live a half mile from where I was born. I'm an Ann Arbor kid.
All right. Okay.
My father was in medical school. He's the class of 1955. He's now retired. But I grew up in Ohio. I lived there. I did not live the middle 35, 37 years of my life here. But I grew up in Ohio in a small town. And I'm also a product of Jesuit education. So whatever things I bring, my questioning air of things probably comes from the good dear
that
Jesuits.
That wasn't one of those vows of silence. That was a vow of talking. Is that right?
Probably. Absolutely. Yeah, there's no such thing as silence within a Jesuit community.
So were you, let's go back to your own youth. Were you a good communicator?
Oh, I probably not. Actually, if you talk about communication, what my first avocation was photography.
Oh, okay.
So I was communicating that way through images. And if you're a photographer, you don't talk a great deal. At least I didn't. And
good
so I
smile,
probably
right?
Absolutely, yeah. Good smile. But I did have an opportunity to do a couple of internships. I worked for local newspapers, and that was a lot of fun. And I learned a little bit about the news business, but it also got me out and about and working with people at all levels as a very young person.
Okay, so this is not a natural thing for you to write speeches or teach people about how to ask good questions. This is something you've had to learn yourself then.
I have learned it myself. I started, of course, initially made my living as a writer, so that's a communicator.
Okay.
But when you're articulating messages for other people, I always remember a colleague of mine years ago said that, John, you're a very good sponge, so that makes me good for listening. But when you're in a coaching situation or public speaking, as both you and I do a lot of that, Rob, we have to formulate our thoughts and organize them. And again, of course, that's where writing comes involved.
Sure,
so
sure.
We're staying on message that way.
Yeah, I was. You're listening to Eiler and Pasek on Innovations today, and we're talking to John Baldoni. And John, I had an experience this morning. I do some teaching over at the business school at the University of Michigan, as you do. And I'm working with a group of students who are going to be going overseas I actually work with 40 teams of students who are going to go overseas, and I have 1 hour to do team building with them. And you know what I do is I actually have them tell their stories about growing up, but then I ask them to each come up with a good question. And it's fascinating, you know, how challenging that is to come up with a good question. And if you get a good question that goes below the surface, it really opens up the team, and it's an amazing process to watch that.
Absolutely, Rob. Questioning is a powerful tool for leaders. But leaders need to know how to ask questions appropriately. For example, if you ask questions like a prosecuting attorney, or why did you do this, with a harsh tone, or what were you doing, what were you thinking when you did that, people will draw back from you. But if you say, tell me about, or why did you do this, or how could we do this? You invite a response. And questions that leaders, it's a powerful communication tool.
Now, John, I know one of the things that you've done is studied great leaders and looked at their communication secrets, and that's one of the titles of your book, I think, Communication Secrets of Great Leaders. Is that right?
Indeed it is, Rob.
And could you give us a story? I mean, you said that stories are good ways, so give us some stories here. Can you tell us a story about a great leader and a communication method that you thought fascinating?
Well, one of the folks from history, and I'm a great, I love history and read it a great deal as much as I can. And of course, when I'm asked about great communicators, I always choose Winston Churchill. And there's so many things. There was a man that learned how to ask questions appropriately. Not only could he articulate a message, but he was incurably curious. And that curiosity would sometimes get him in trouble, of course, but it also was a way of him teaching himself and learning about issues. And he was also someone who was not shy about communicating his own points of view. And that was most particular during the darkest days of the Second World War for Britain, when she stood alone against Nazi Germany. Remember, the United States was not involved. France had fallen, and Russia was still an ally of Nazi Germany. And Churchill's speeches actually rallied the entire nation together. As commentators have said, he created a pageant and put the British people in that pageantry. But there's one wonderful little side note I liked about Churchill, and it was his spirit of optimism. And at one time, he wrote a little note, wrote a memo to his staff saying that Prime Minister kindly requests that people speak more optimistically about our circumstance. So he was always looking for that positive.
And he also had a tremendous sense of humor, I understand.
Humor was incurable with him, as it was with his great friend FDR as well, another great communicator.
Great. So we're talking to John Baldoni, whose latest book, can you say it again, John, the name of your latest book?
How Great Leaders Get Great Results.
All right, and we're listening to Talk Radio 1600 WAAM in Ann Arbor, Michigan. This is Rob Pasek. And we're going to go to a break, and we'll be back with more John Baldoni on Innovations with Eiler and Pasek. So let's take that break now.
You're listening to the commercial-free webcast of Innovations with Eiler and Pasek.
This is Rob Pasek, and you're back with Innovations with Eiler and Pasek, a new show designed to try to highlight the leadership potential and the positive things that are happening in Michigan. And today we have one of the most positive forces, John Baldoni, who is a leadership coach, communication consultant, and the author of 6 books on motivation, leadership, communication. And John's been telling us some stories. He ended up mentioning FDR and Winston Churchill. And we all think about FDR and Winston Churchill as two of the great communicators, but maybe we're not so sure why that is. And could you go a little bit more and talk about some of the great leaders that you've interviewed, or obviously you didn't interview the old guys, but you know, you've had some opportunity to interview some new people. And what makes a great communicator?
Thanks for asking that, Rob, because actually it comes down to commitment and willingness to do it. And whenever I think of, certainly in contemporary politics, or at least our contemporary, Rob, you and I, you cannot overlook Ronald Reagan. And that's a wonderful example of, I mean, we called him the great communicator. And while in his office, he was often maligned as being lazy or less than attentive. But actually, what he was always doing was working on his speeches, writing letters. It was a relentless communicator. And he understood that his greatest strengths was as a communicator. And he used his communication to mobilize his staff, his people, and the American electorate, and eventually the world. I mean, one of the reasons we now live the end of the Cold War was Ronald Reagan's relentless commitment to the idea of that we didn't need to live in this bipolar world, East versus West. And it was through his reaching out to the Soviet Union, along with building up the U.S. military, that led to a rapprochement with the East on that, and eventually the fall of the Soviet Union. But Ronald Reagan was someone as an actor, worked very hard on his communication. He was a good storyteller. He practiced his stories, and he knew how to relate to groups one in small groups as well as through his speeches. And that was very much practiced, and that is something that I work with leaders on. There's the communication. You can't take it for granted. It's effort.
Okay, John, would you be interested in or willing to critique a couple of our current leaders and talk about, you know, I think everybody's interested in what makes people good and not good. I'm fascinated by American Idol, and I think that's so interesting because you hear three people giving critiques about people basically giving auditions for music, and it's fascinating because the three people often do not agree. And I'm sure, you know, you have some opinions about some of our leaders. So let's take some of the ones that you may be familiar with. Obviously, Jennifer Granholm, George Bush, other people, football coaches, whoever you might be interested in talking about.
Well, I admire Governor Granholm for her communication, and I'll say that for a she is among the very best political commentators and communicators that I've ever seen. And I think that our society unfairly judges women communicators, because when women raise their voice or become passionate about an issue, sometimes the criticism comes back at them as they're strident or they're uncaring about people. And that's exactly the opposite. Governor Granholm has a wonderful way of articulating a message and doing it in very human way. She herself is a storyteller, and I admire her for that kind of thing. And you can tell in her communications that she has listened to opposing points of view.
Okay. So, how about other political leaders that we watch communicate and either scratch our heads or are ready to join them?
Well, if you want to take our president, whatever your political view is, he seems to be one who is very good at communicating in a small group. But when he gets on the podium, his verbal faculty seems to desert him. But he's also not someone that strikes us as one who listens to alternative points of view. And so he comes across as a one-note politician, or at times his communications can be very strident. So from a communication standpoint, he is less than effective, especially as we see now when his presidency is in crisis. He does not seem to have the skills to reach out to opposing constituencies and build coalitions, whereas fellow Republican Ronald Reagan was certainly able to do that. And, of course, his predecessor, Bill Clinton, was a master at that.
Yeah. And what was it about Clinton that made him such an effective communicator?
Well, Clinton,
of course, we also see how popularity and communication don't necessarily correlate. But
that's true. But Clinton was, you get the feeling that Clinton is a great listener. The other thing he is, and still is today, is a great, he has a terrific ability to read an audience, to judge what an audience wants to hear and deliver that. Now, the criticism of that is that he's wishy-washy or only tells us what we want to hear. That's a common criticism of many politicians and certainly was leveled against Clinton in his time.
Okay, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Innovations with Eiler and Pasek, and we have our very special guest today, John Baldoni, and we'll be back with you in just a minute.
You're listening to the commercial-free webcast of Innovations with Eiler and Pasek.
We're back with our guest today, John Baldoni, who is a leadership coach and the author of 6 books published by McGraw-Hill. And that's Baldoni, B-A-L-D-O-N-I, if you want to find it on Amazon or at Barnes & Noble. And John, one of the things I think people find interesting about you is that you're a speech writer. That's one of your major things. And I think sometimes people are pretty surprised, even though we know it intuitively, that great leaders do not write their own speeches. So could you tell us a little bit about what that process is like? I don't know if you can mention names, but I know you've written for some great business leaders. And what's that process like? How much is your work? How much is their work? What's the process?
Well, I think the secret of great speech writing is, first of all, anonymity. So I don't want to talk about those that I've written for.
So you can't tell people that you've written all of Rob Pasek's speeches, Jen.
Well, all right, yeah, Rob. We let the cat out of the bag. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm the voice behind the throne here for you. I think the secret of good speech writing is A, to listen and to understand the message that your speaker wants to give. You have to be able to get inside his or her head and understand what the issues are, and to be able to articulate those messages in his or her own words. And a way we do that is with stories, and many of those stories always come from the individual speaker, but it's the timing and the phrasing so that you capture the rhythm of that speaker so that his or her message sounds exactly like that person.
Yeah, I was thinking about Ted Sorensen, who was JFK's speechwriter, who was one of them. I forget there was another one, but I think Sorensen was the one who wrote the great quote, and help me get this right, ask not what you could do for you. Hey, help me get it right. Yeah. I don't want to blow it here.
Ask not what you can do for your country, but ask what you can do for your country. Yes, that's a Sorensen.
No, wait, ask not what your country can do for you.
But that's here we are. I'm putting myself on the spot here, Rob, as a great communicator. I can't remember
Quote right. Let's try it one more time.
Ask not what your country can do for you, but rather what you can do for your country.
There, we've got it.
And that's a wonderful paradigm, because at that time, people were looking to government to do things for them, whereas Kennedy was looking at to mobilize the nation. Chiefly, the framework of that, of course, was the Cold War. So we need to stand up to the cruel Soviets. We need to be the voice of freedom for the world. And also, on a social context, people need to be willing to do for themselves. That's also a very powerful leadership message that I personally believe in. You and I, Rob, have come up through the great transition in management. When we started our careers, hierarchy was the way of things. And when you create hierarchies, and our great companies in this area are all that. I mean, it's people at the top, you are told what to do, and you do it. Well, that paradigm has shifted completely. We are now in a global economy where decentralized decision-making, that means decision-making at every level, is very important. So I always coach people, and I know you do too, Rob, to take control of their own destiny. So don't expect the company to do for you, do for yourself first.
Yeah, that's a great message. And I think the fascinating thing about the Sorensen-Kennedy thing is that we assume Kennedy wrote that line, and that's the line that actually, you know, if we can remember it, is the line that we remember John F. Kennedy about. And of course, he was a great hero to many of us baby boomers who lived through his time and also through his death, and yet that's a speechwriter that came up with that line.
Well, that is true, I believe. And there's another thing that Kennedy was also a good quipster, and there's a famous quote, but it's attributed to him, and it's a good lesson for all leaders. And he said that success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan. And he said that in the context of the failure of the invasion of the Bay of Pigs, when the CIA armed a group of Cuban to retake the island of Cuba from Fidel Castro, and it was a disaster. The forces were slaughtered on the beach, and those that survived were imprisoned. Kennedy, that initiative was started under President Eisenhower under the direction of Alan Dulles. And 5 months in the invasion itself was May of 1961. Well, Kennedy had only been in office a very short period of time, yet he let this operation go forward. So he is, of course, responsible. But what he did was he stood up and took public responsibility for it. And curiously, his popularity rose to an all-time high. I think his popularity was about 80% at that time. And so much so that he quipped off the record that he needed a few more failures like that to help his record.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating. And I think the ability of leaders to get up in front of an audience is so important. By the way, you're listening to Talk Radio 1600 WAAM in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and our guest today is John Baldoni, a leadership coach and author, and we're talking about leadership and communication. John, I was remembering some of the great leaders I've worked with and some of the great moments in my executive coaching career. One of the ones that stands out was September 11th, 2001, and at that time, I was a consultant here in Ann Arbor, and I was called to New York City a couple days after September 11th to work with a company that had lost several people, and in the World Trade Center. And the guy that I was working with is a fellow named Phil Lynch, who was the CEO of Reuters in New York, and he had just come into his office probably 2 months before the disaster, maybe even less than that. And I remember we were all sitting around a kind of a war room saying, what do we do to help stem the hurt and the pain and the fear? This is a company right in the middle of Times Square. And we came up with this idea of having a town hall meeting. And Phil and his fellow officers got up in front of 300 or 400 people that worked, well, 3,000 or 4,000 people, I should say, that worked for Reuters and talked about what had happened and what they were doing about it. And it was such an important communication. And Phil just stood up, and what you said about the spontaneity, nobody wrote his speech for him. He spoke from the heart. And it seems to me that that gift, to be able to speak from the heart, is so powerful for a leader. And no matter what you could write for somebody, if they can speak from the heart, what does that mean to you, speak from the heart? What's that quality all about?
Well, what it gets to, Rob, is authenticity. And that's what we expect from our leaders. Another word for authenticity is being real, being genuine. And leaders who, the way you govern, the way you lead and guide others is because people trust you. Followers imbue you with a sense of their followership. That's a gift from them. You must earn that. And that comes from your authenticity, who you are, your values and beliefs and convictions.
Now, John, in your research about leaders, could you, again, you mentioned some of the great communicators, but who are some of the great authentic leaders? And they don't necessarily have to be famous people, but some example of those qualities.
Whenever I'm asked about authenticity, I always get back to a story of Peter Pace. Peter Pace is now General Peter Pace. He's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, Michael Useem, is a professor at Wharton, and Mike did a whole chapter on his book, a very fine book called Leading Up. And at the time he profiled Peter Pace, Peter was a two-star general in the Marine Corps and had multiple bosses. And he talked about the various ways that he communicated with his boss. And one of the lasting lessons was that if he was ever going to disagree with a boss in a meeting, he would brief him in advance and say, I'm going to have to disagree with you, but I want you to know why, and I'm not going to blindside you. And this is why we're disagreeing. But anyway, here he was, and Mike invited him to come and speak to his MBA class in Wharton, the University of Pennsylvania. And 10 minutes before the class came, General Pace walked into the room, went around to the various students, and introduced himself and said, "Hi, I'm Pete Pace. How are you? Where are you from?" Now, authenticity. Yeah. So often, CEOs or people in positions of power distance themselves from their audience, where we can all learn from General Pace as to how to connect with people.
Do you think that was a technique General Pace did, or is it something, again, authentic? Is it something that he felt he really wanted to know his audience before he
talked? I think that's very much comes from, he's a Marine, and actually the first Marine to be a Joint Chief of Staff, the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff. I think that's a learned technique, but it's part of who he is. General Eisenhower had that same common touch. It's a way to relate people. And when you reach out and touch people, I've seen CEOs do this, you communicate on a human level. It's a learned technique, but it's if it's a reflection of who you are as a leader, it's a very powerful way to connect to an individual and make them feel important, which is an essential part of leadership.
I think it's so hard to train people about authenticity. It's almost like saying to somebody, well, you're going to learn to be spontaneous. And well, wait, either you are or you aren't. And I remember doing a training program at one of the auto companies here, and the idea was trying to help the leaders get more in touch with their people. And this was a plant manager. And I said, well, you know, get out and, you know, do management by walking around and ask people how things are. So this guy was very rote about it, though. And he'd go around and he'd say, hi, John, how was your weekend? Hi, Bill, how was your weekend? Nancy, how was your weekend? And finally he gets to Ruth, let's say, and he says, Ruth, how was your weekend? She said, well, not so good. My father had a heart attack and died. And he looked at her kind of stunned, and then he said, so, Sue, how was your weekend? So, you know, there's a danger of telling people to be authentic and ask unless they're actually going to listen.
Well, that's a good point, Robin. I don't think you can be authentic. You are authentic.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to be back with John Baldoni one more time. And you're listening to Innovations with Eiler and Pasek on Talk Radio 1600.
You're listening to the commercial-free webcast of Innovations with Eiler and Pasek.
This is Innovations with Eiler and Pasek, and this is Rob Pasek, your host today on 1600 WAAM Talk Radio. And our guest today is John Baldoni, who is a world-leading expert on communication and leadership. And John, one of the things we hear a lot about was this notion of being present and leadership presence. What the heck is that all about?
Leadership presence is a very powerful attribute of leadership. I define it as earned authority. Sometimes we use the term executive presence. To me, that sounds artificial. I prefer the term leadership presence. And what that means is how you connect to other individuals, how others perceive you. Now, the best way you reinforce your leadership presence is through your actions and your example. But what people want from their leaders, and they'll often give them the benefit of the doubt to start, show me. And then they'll begin to trust them. But it's how you use authority. Are you decisive? Are you confident? How do you radiate optimism? How do you bring people together? How do you leverage dissent? Are you a tolerant person? Do you welcome contrary points of view? All of these things lead to your sense of presence. And it's very important. And let's be honest, there's a degree of acting in leadership presence, in leadership itself. And that doesn't mean that leaders are disingenuous or are not being truthful with us. That simply means they're getting out of their skin. And that's that public act. Yeah. And as a communicator, to deliver a speech, to speak to a group, part of that is an act. And that means that act is the willingness to commit to the group, to the needs of the group. So it's a healthful form of acting.
Okay. And, you know, this notion of people think about giving a speech or talking. And, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with the statistics that this is probably the number one phobia of most people in this country is the fear of standing up in front of a crowd and giving a speech. So a lot of what you're talking about, they probably think, oh, that's great, but that's not for me. Do you think you could take somebody who is afraid of public speaking and make them into an effective speaker?
Absolutely. How effective they will be is a matter of
We're not talking
degree.
About pills here, right? We're talking about
No, it's
yeah.
right. And yeah. It always reminds me of Jerry Seinfeld had that great line when he talked about speech phobia. He said, that means the number one fear of if you were at a funeral, most people would rather be at the corpse than to deliver the eulogy. So anyway, yes, you can that. It's come with the way I work for when I do speech coaching. I work from the inside out. I look at the individual as a leader and say, I stroke them. You have a good point of view to take. People want to listen to you. So let's work on that. Let's get that message out there. And some people say, hey, I want to have a word-for-word script where I can read it. That's fine. That's a good starting point. If it gives them a sense of confidence the freedom to stand up in front of an audience and deliver that message, that's fine. But we work on that point of view, who you are and what you want to communicate. Other people prefer to work strictly from notes. Whatever way you're connecting to your audience is appropriate.
All right, John. Well, we've got about five more minutes here, and maybe our listeners would like to hear between you and me some ideas for helping people to become more effective communicators, more effective motivators, more effective development of innovation in people. So let's talk about some of the tips that you give people. By the way, you're listening to Innovations with Eiler and Pasek. This is Rob Pasek on Talk Radio 1600 WAAM, and John Baldoni today is our guest. So, John, what are some of the tips that you could give the ordinary person about ways to be more effective communicator? They're not Winston Churchill. They're not FDR.
Well, Rob, I often work with the proposition that as a leader, leadership is not about you. It's about creating conditions for people to succeed. So as a manager, you want to enable your people to be able to do the work. So that means you provide them with the resources, network for them, advocate for them. At the same time, leadership is all about you, because if you're not creating those conditions for people to succeed, who is? And that's really the heart of motivation. As you know, Rob, you really can't motivate people to do things. You can frighten them, you can use fear, but that's a limiting effect in it. But when you create conditions for people to succeed and you reward them, and that reward can simply be, hey, that's a great job, Rob. Yeah. I like what you've done. That's very powerful.
And I noticed that about the motivation too, John, that not everybody's motivated by the same thing. It's one of the key things I teach in my own leadership coaching, is that there's three things. There's some people are praise is everything. They want to know they're doing a good job. Other people want to feel like they belong. They want to feel like they're part of the team. Other people want to be given positions of power, given things to make them, you know, the plaque on the wall or whatever. And, you know, there's a wide variety of different strokes for different folks when it comes to motivation.
Absolutely, Rob. And it's up to the manager, or certainly in a coaching environment, to discover what is makes it tick. Does it someone, is he motivated or she motivated by earning more money? Is it that person wants to move up the ladder? Is it simple recognition? Or is it time off? Finding those areas is what's important. And that's the point of discovery. And that comes from listening to people.
And sometimes the other thing is that, you know, we're very used to our culture giving criticism and railing on people. And some people who are what I would think of as more sensitive are just devastated by criticism. And I think bosses do not recognize how destructive that can be.
Good story on that, Rob. And I had the opportunity to write about Red Berenson, as a coach of University of Michigan hockey team. And Red told me the story that sometime he would raise his voice to a freshman, and the young freshman would put his head down, and he said, gosh, I could lose him for the rest of the season. By contrast, he said, if I didn't raise my voice to one of my experienced seniors, he wouldn't be listening at all. So it's understanding that moment. And as you know, when it comes to coaching, Rob, you always open with a positive. And that's one of the points of advice that I always give managers is, yes, the individual may not be doing many things right, or maybe not too many things at all, especially if he or she is a new hire, but compliment them on something. Hey, I like the way you showed up today, and begin that way. So a form of affirmation.
Yeah, and I think that's really good, because the other thing I think people make as a mistake is that they do not recognize the fact that people are really easily devastated by criticism and can just fall apart from it. And a lot of times, all people want to do is be understood. I remember running a group, and we had several meetings, and I worked with executives, and I asked people to give me feedback at the end. And one people said, this was a fantastic CEO group because I was understood by my fellow CEOs. I got it. They got me. And, you know, that's such a minor thing. You think, well, you've got to give them great suggestions or great ideas. But sometimes just understanding somebody could be the greatest gift you give.
Listening. That's a powerful tool. And part of that listening means checking for understanding. Do you understand what I was telling you? And tell me about that.
It's all
that
right. Give and John, take. We're running out of time. I want to be sure people know how to reach you one more time here. So if you've got some contact information, how do you get a hold of John Baldoni if you want to hire him as a coach or have him write a speech or you just want to talk to a great guy?
My website is www.johnbaldoni.com.
And can you spell that, John?
Baldoni. And if you forget, simply go to Google and search for my name, John Baldoni, Baldoni. Thanks.
Okay, you've been listening to John Baldoni on Innovations with Eiler and Pasek. We're at a point where we're going to wrap up today. We hope you listen to us next Sunday on Talk Radio 1600. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Rob.
We hope you've enjoyed this commercial-free webcast of Innovations with Eiler and Pasek. Thanks for listening.